Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table at Central United Methodist Church. The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Du Hirsu,
with a musical introduction by Brendan Lowe, our director of music. Thanks for listening.
Comes from John 1, verses 9 through 18, and we're using a translation this morning that does use some gendered language that is a little bit different from what we normally hear at the table here, but just wanted to name and acknowledge that. The life light was the real thing. Every person entering life, he brings into light. He was in the world was there through him. And yet the world didn't even notice. He came to his own people, but they didn't want him. But whoever did want him, who believed he was who he claimed, and would do what he said, he made to be their true selves, their child of God selves. These are the God begotten, not blood begotten, not flesh begotten, not sex begotten. The world became flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one-of-a-kind glory, like Father, like Son, generous inside and out, true from start to finish. John pointed him out and called, "This is the one I told you was coming after me, but in fact was ahead of me. He has always been ahead of me, has always had the first word." We all live off his generous bounty, gift after gift after gift. We got the basics from Moses, and then this exuberant giving and receiving, this endless knowing and understanding. All this came through Jesus, the Messiah. No one has ever seen God, not so much as a glimpse, this one-of-a-kind God expression who exists as at the very heart of the Father has made him plain as day.
Over my head, I hear music in the air. Over my head, I hear music in the air. Over my head, I hear music in the air. There must be a God somewhere.
Oh, where the world is silent,
I hear music in the air.
There's a whole lot going on right now. When I stand still, for me, I'm an Enneagram 4, true confession. I feel it. It's like why I have my cowboy boots on, so I am rooted. Because I feel like the world is swirling around me. There are certain world leaders posturing for war. The United Methodist Church, which is all I've ever known, is proposing a schism. On the front page of the New York Times, meat eaters are being faced with the fact that a plant-based diet might save the planet. When we were in Europe, my husband ate bistecca every day. That's beef. Every day. There's a lot. Also, the Patriots lost. Brendan. Brendan's from Boston. I'm old enough that I would like to say the 49ers may be coming back. Anyway, that feels swirly too, because if they come back, Joe Montana's not there. There is so much out there. There is so much swirling around me, so many things to have feelings about. And honestly, I joke, but for me, there's a lot to be mad about right now. A whole lot. And I kind of lean into that. And holding so much mad can often end up making a person feel isolated and alone. But the truth is, we're not alone. We aren't. As many of us are trying to discern how we can more faithfully and lovingly engage those feelings, especially the mad that we feel. Matt and I really prayerfully read through the longing so many of you shared in your deep commitments just a few days after I returned from being away for a really long time. And if you haven't turned in your deep commitment, I could get up mad about that too. They were beautiful. And the thing is, over and over and over again, you all expressed in one way or another your hope to find ways to strengthen relationships with those that you disagree with, which you were specific about. This included your family members and your workmates and your friends, and then just even your neighbors in your neighborhood and around the city as you practice your faith. And it was from that that we came up with this series. So we came up with this series. We might have come up with it earlier because it might keep coming up that we should come up with a series around Mr. Rogers. And if you talk to Matt's daughter, Eleanor, who's 10, she is not surprised that finally Linda and Matt came up with a series about Mr. Rogers in hopes of learning lessons about this Christian life. Because Eleanor had to sit through the documentary with her dad last year, and then in the fall, she had to sit through Tom Hanks' version of it. And she might have even said something like, "Daddy, you love Mr. Rogers so much, you want to wear a BFF necklace with him." Yeah, she gave us permission to share that. She is very aware that her dad is crushing on Rogers, and she knows part of that is because Mr. Rogers was a pastor, like her dad. I, however, spent the last week as a hot mess. So first of all, you weren't here, but I had to deal with Herod. So I was still angry with King Herod all Sunday, most into Monday. And then I got mad about the world. And then I got mad about the United Methodist Church. And then I circled all the way around and got mad at you again. That's in 5 minutes, just so you know, because I am so mad and I have to focus on the nicest man in the world. Like everything I read kept going, "Linda, calm down, Linda, calm down. He's a 9 on the Enneagram." One thing that kept rising from the nicest man in the world, though, as I read and I researched, is a person, I've decided, cannot become the nicest person in the world if they haven't at some point felt mad. Like, really. And so then I learned that while Fred Rogers had a loving family, he needed help with his feelings. And his mad was part of that, and everything else that he felt. And what I learned is the adults around him did not really seem up to the task. So that's why he created a television show to help children deal with their feelings. Mr. Rogers wondered and wrote about feelings because he longed to help children, but really I think all of us move through the mad that we feel en route to doing a better job of loving ourselves and each other. And he wrote and spoke about knowing oneself and the sense of wholeness that comes along with self-awareness, like looking in the mirror at ourselves. And he understood that it is out of our struggle for becoming whole human beings, out of that struggle is how we figure out who we really are. There's a book that he wrote. He wrote many, The World According to Mr. Rogers. And here's how he writes. These are his words. Deep within us, no matter who we are, there lives a feeling of wanting to be lovable, of wanting to be the kind of person that others like to be with. And the greatest thing we can do is to let people know that they are loved and capable of loving. Love isn't a state of perfect caring. It is an active noun, like struggle. To love someone is to strive to accept that person exactly the way that person is right here and now. So that's our hope over these 4 weeks, is to hold the life and the teachings of Mr. Rogers in a conversation, a dynamic conversation with the readings that are assigned to the Global Church from the lectionary, as we move into the deep questions that we have about the world and the church and who we are and why any of it matters anyway. Fred Rogers asked deep questions so calmly. There's nothing quite like it. It's so calm that it seems normal. Like he normalizes deep questions. So in his last commencement address to the faculty, the students, and the parents, so these are fresh-faced college graduates of Dartmouth College, which is where he went his first year, and then he quit and went to a different school. He said this, "I'm very much interested in choices and what it is and who it is that enable us human beings to make the choices we make all through our lives." Next question he asked. What choices lead to ethnic cleansing? What choices lead to healing? What choices lead to the destruction of our environment, the erosion of the Sabbath, suicide bombings, or teenagers shooting their teachers? What choices encourage heroism in the midst of chaos? See, I was a hot mess all week just with that. Fred Rogers was born and raised in Latrobe, Pennsylvania. It was a small town, is a small town near Pittsburgh. He was born to a very wealthy family where he experienced what he described as a very lonely childhood, in which he often faced illness, challenges with his weight, and being bullied. Despite this, he felt loved and cared for by his parents and his grandparents, and his grandparents lived right around the corner. Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, the layout of it, and the doctor and the baker and the dentist were all part of his own small town in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, along with the trolleys. It was all there. I learned that Fred fell in love with the piano at a young age. And given our own love of music here at the table, I just wanted to share this story from his childhood. He was about 4 years old, and his parents bought him a pump organ. You know what that is. You have to pump while you play, right? And he loved it, actually. And he showed great promise, and the promise came by he would hear a song one time and be able to recreate it by ear. So he said, "I was always able to cry or laugh or say I was mad through the lips of my fingers on the piano." So by the time Fred was 10, he told his grandmother that he wanted a real piano. So his Nana promised to buy him one, that he could shop for it. So on the next visit, he said he would, and he would go shopping at the piano store. It's a showroom in town. So he did that, and he got on the trolley all by himself, 10 years old, and went 4 miles to the showroom. And the store was called Steinway & Sons. And reportedly, he played every single solitary piano in the showroom, and he settled on a Steinway Concert Grand Model D. And that particular one had been refurbished. It was built in 1920. It weighed half a ton. I know. And it was the type you find in concert halls. So he went to the salespeople who were around and said, I want this one. And they all laughed at him. And then he soon returned with a check in paid in full from his Nana. And he kept that piano for the rest of his life, his whole rest of his life. He grew up and then earned a bachelor's degree in music, not just music, music composition. And he graduated from Rollins College in 1951. Yeah, that's so great. He composed hundreds of songs, which translated the concepts of child development into musical messages in a language that Fred believed children could understand. And some songs celebrate good feelings, some are calming, others are for times when children are struggling with a particular issue, like jealousy or persistence or being separated from a loved one. He has songs about all of that. After college, his plan was to enter seminary and study for the ministry. And this plan shifted his senior year of college when he went home for winter break and he saw television for the very first time. It was a monumental moment for him because he was moved almost immediately to explore the potential of this new medium he had never seen before. And here's how he described it later in an interview. He said, I went into TV because I hated it so. And I thought there must be some way of using this instrument to nurture those who would watch and listen. I got into TV because I saw people throwing pies at each other's faces. And that to me was such demeaning behavior. And if there's anything that bothers me, it's one person demeaning another. That really makes me mad. So he and his piano, it went with him everywhere, moved to New York City and went to work for NBC. And after many years, and he was successful there, Fred concluded that commercial TV, their reliance on advertising and merchandising undermined their ability to truly educate, love, and nurture children. So against all of his friends and family's advice, he quit. And he moved to Pittsburgh. And when he moved back to Pittsburgh, he worked for public television as a puppeteer, and he worked on several kids' shows. And during his lunch break, he made an arrangement that he would take classes at the seminary. So he did it kind of part-time, and he graduated, and he was ordained as a Presbyterian pastor in 1963. And Fred never served a local church like this. Rather, he continued to work in children's television and ultimately created Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood in 1968. And as I got to know him this week, I actually began to think of him as a pastor to our whole nation. There's a way of that. Through the medium of television, he extended pastoral care to the least among us, our children. And Fred knew that followers of the way of Jesus are called to be neighbors to everyone. And though he was not what we would call an overt preacher on his show, the gospel ran through his show as much as any sermon I have ever preached. John is not my favorite gospel, but it does contain one of my most favorite Bible verses. In the New Revised Standard Version, which you did not hear, it says, and the Word became flesh and lived among us, and we have seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth. And I especially appreciate Eugene Peterson's rendering of this because he translates lived among us to the word neighborhood. That's where that comes in. So it reads as Chloe did for us. The word was made flesh and blood and moved into the neighborhood. We saw the glory with our own eyes, the one of a kind glory, like a parent, like a child, generous inside and out, true from start to finish. neighborhood. Just the word itself reminds me of the places I grew up. Maybe when I say it, you're already going there in your own mind. It reminds me of learning to ride my bike. Reminds me of playing hide and seek when I was young. It reminds me of hearing my friend Katie's mom sound her trumpet when it was time for us to go home for supper. That's what Barbara did. I remember the families along El Dorado Street. And when I hear this, I think the word was made flesh and moved into my North Berkeley neighborhood. In my neighborhood, it felt like everybody belonged. We played together. We were in and out of each other's homes and yards. We tested our independence by walking through the tunnel at the top of Solano Avenue all the way down to McCollum's for ice cream. When tragedy struck and one of the children among us was killed, the parents held up the other grieving parents. Our whole neighborhood was welcome, and we sat together at the funeral in the synagogue. A few years later, when another child died in our neighborhood, we were all together again, this time in a church. It was hard to play and miss our young friends, but we were all in it together. The word neighborhood really stirs up a lot. Mr. Rogers is quoted as saying this: anything that's human is mentionable. And anything that is mentionable can be more manageable. And when we can talk about our feelings, they become less overwhelming, less upsetting, and less scary. The people we trust with that important talk can help us know that we are not alone. Who knows? Maybe Eugene Peterson was even inspired by Mr. Rogers, because he published The Message in 1993, after that show had been around a long time. When Eugene Peterson says that the word was made flesh and moved into the neighborhood, it is actually possible to hear and imagine for oneself that the word moved into my neighborhood, your neighborhood. The word was made flesh and moved like next door. And if that is true, then it means that God moves in everywhere. See, in all kinds of neighborhoods, mine, yours, everyone's. The beauty of this text, as he's rendered it, is that Jesus moves into every single neighborhood, from the Barrio street corners to the Gold Coast condos, from ghetto places to suburban locked behind gates mansions, from the streets of South Sacramento to the affluence of Rockland, from war-torn Iran to the extravagance of Dubai. The word Jesus dwells with us all, in all of our neighborhoods. And Mr. Rogers understood this deep, deep in his bones. He began broadcasting in 1968, so I was 7 then. I was a little too old for it to catch my interest, but my little brother and sister watched it. I checked in with them this week, mainly my brother. I asked him, and he said, yeah, I watched, but we only had 6 channels, so that was the big reason. And then also because it was back-to-back with the electric company, right? So not exactly a fan. Not everyone was a fan of Mr. Rogers. Some could never get over the mannerisms, the tone of his voice. Some found him to be condescending. And it's worth noting, though, that none of these critiques were offered by children in the ages of 2 years to 5 years old. That was his target audience. His care and concern always was for children. And he wanted them to know and recognize feelings and be able to name those feelings and to go on to be healthy, feeling adults. They trace that it was when Fred actually began publishing books and adults could experience him through reading, not hearing his voice, but reading it for themselves, that a shift seemed to occur and his status in our country as an icon began to grow. There was one television executive, these are his words. He's just, you can't read this stuff without thinking, my God, this is amazing. That's my image of a TV exec. I mean, it's true. I can't believe that guy, Mr. Rogers, wrote this stuff. So here's the deal. There are a lot of unmentionable feelings, things swirling around me and maybe in you right now. And I think it's easier to read the words, Mr. Rogers writes, to read them than to actually live them, which is what he wants for us. And that makes me want to have an argument with him. A real yelling match. Like, I can really throw down with Mr. Rogers and express my feelings loudly. But you know why I actually do that? It's so I can distract myself from, see, the pain that we just all carry around. Everybody, not just me. And see, it's easier to be mad and yell. And it's much harder to stay present to the feelings of sadness and disappointment and despair that are in our bodies. It's hard, but it's not impossible. So we're just going to show one small clip holding that. Let's listen to Mr. Rogers say it way better than me.
But you know, the toughest thing is to love somebody who has done something mean to you, especially when that somebody has been yourself. Have you ever done anything mean to yourself? Well, it's very important to look inside yourself and find that loving part of you. That's the part that you must take good care of and never be mean to. Because that's the part of you that allows you to love your neighbor. And your neighbor is anyone you happen to be with at any time of your life. Respecting and loving your neighbor can give everybody a good feeling.
To find our way in following Jesus, I believe we must be people who are trusted with the important talk like that. We must be people who mention the unmentionable so that it is more manageable, like he just did. It's why we gather in circles in our neighborhoods and we ask each other every week these questions. This week, how have you been practicing staying in love with God? How have you done harm? Those can be feeling unmentionable. How have you tried to do some good? That can be the same. It's our way of asking, won't you be my neighbor? Over and over again, we invite each other in our kitchen tables into important talk, and then we hold the space, hold the silence, as people answer. So this is what helps me. This is what helps me. And maybe it helps some of you to understand what it was like, what it is like, what it will be like when the Word is made flesh and blood and moves into your neighborhood. Amen.
Wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you. So let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well stay. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be? won't you be